Welcome to the Rock Harbor Podcast. We're so glad you've decided to tune in today. We'd love to stay connected with you, and one of the best ways to do that is through our social media platforms, at Rock Harbor TV. Also, we'd encourage you to download the Rock Harbor app. It's one of the best ways to follow along with today's teaching and the best way to stay connected with everything going on here at Rock Harbor. Thanks for tuning in.
Well, hey, we want to welcome you this morning, whether you're in person or online. If you happen to be online and not in this area, you have no idea that there is a hurricane that is heading inland. And today is our river baptisms. 343 people are going to be baptized in a hurricane. This is amazing. So what we'll do, we'll have your family, so when they're baptized, you're going to pick them up in Nampa. So we're going to start an eagle, and it'll just be like one of these. So they'll have to be raised in the newness of Christ somewhere around Eagle Road and then in Nampa. So many people. Are we doing baptisms? Yes, we are. We don't know what that looks like yet. Okay, but we're doing them today. It'll take place at that exact time. We have some backup plans and all of that. We'll communicate through social media, email, different things like that. But it's happening today. Lots of family come in to visit. And so we're going to glorify the fact that Jesus Christ absolutely changes lives, and God has a sense of humor, okay? And so I'm going to tell some stories towards the end about how Rock Harbor started, and you'll be like, wow, he really does have a sense of humor. When we started as a church, the church, obviously we named it Rock Harbor. It doesn't make a ton of sense, right? But I mean, first off, it does that it's founded on a rock. It's a harbor, a safe place for people to come into. Boats don't stay in the harbor. Here's what a harbor looks like. You know, boats are to go out to seek and save those who were lost, right? But doesn't make a lot of sense because we're in Idaho. There's not a ton of harbors. This isn't like, oh, that's, I wondered what was in South Boise. This is not a local picture, okay? But we also were thinking like Rock Dock because we have lots of docks here. It just didn't jive. And then we were like Rock Desert. And then that didn't work. And then we're like Rock Subdivision because there's tons of them. And then that was weird. And so anyways, landed on Rock Harbor, but when you see a harbor, there's a ton of things you're going to find there. First off, smells. There's always unique smells, right? You're smelling fuel, you're smelling fish, you're smelling ocean water. I mean, there's just like this smell to a harbor. You ever went out and purchased like, you know, something like crab, you know, or whatever. You're getting on your boat to go look at something and you're just like, there's some smells here. There's people everywhere. That's another thing. You're going to see people everywhere. Controlled chaos, right? You got forklifts, it's busy. You got, you know, machinery moving stuff around. There's people everywhere. And one thing you'll always find at a harbor is hard work. Hard work. And the passage that we're in today in Colossians 3, specifically verse 23 through 4, chapter 4, verse number 1, talks about the work that we're to do, how we're to work in our community, how we're to work in our workplace, how to work in our families, how to serve in our homes, and how to work in our church and serve in our church. And so I'm going to talk about that. And you're going, okay, Keith, where's this headed? Well, some of you, if you're in person, you know exactly where it's headed because you sat on a paper that says, hey, there are opportunities to serve at Rock Harbor. We're talking about service in general, but specifically about how do we serve in our local church. So I don't want to save a surprise for the end. I want you to know a little bit now. Verse 22, chapter 3. Bond servants, first servants, obey in everything those who are your earthly masters, not by way of eye service as people pleasers, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive an inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ. For the wrongdoer will be paid back for the wrong he's done, and there is no partiality. Masters, treat your bondservants justly and fairly, knowing that you also have a master in heaven. See, there's a lot that's here. In particular, most of our time is going to be spent on as for the Lord. Let's serve, let's work, let's be diligent as for the Lord. But it does talk about a bondservant. Some passages of Scripture talk about slaves and then others, bondservants. What we do know, there were absolutely marginalized people that if their nation was taken over, that in doing that, slaves were brought in. survival was granted, but then you had to serve in this way. And then there was trading of people. This is not okay. This is something that took a long time for our nation, specifically the United States, to get victory over, to be healed from, to continue even to this day, looking and going, okay, what exactly happened and what was going on? There were also bond servants that they made a decision. This was willful employment. They were saying, hey, I want to learn this trade, so I'm going to be a bond servant for you. I want to learn how to do whatever it was. Then you had some people that they were highly educated, but they came in as a bondservant and they educated the wealthy, like in a smaller community or underneath one family's like heritage. And then you have others that they chose. This was a way that they chose to pay off a debt. Hey, we have some debt, but my son is going to go and do this. But bottom line, there was interesting relationships because it was the case that maybe there was a boss at work and then you had this younger person that was the bondservant of them, but then you go to church, and this is why Paul's addressing it. Then you go to church and you've got this person that is an elder in the church, but his boss is underneath him. Not that there's hierarchy, but there's a disciple and a discipler, and he's in a position in this church body, but I'm a newer believer. And so there's some dynamics. That's why Paul is saying, be careful how you treat one another. He's saying God's watching. He's saying there's accountability, verse 25, for how you treat people. If you're wrongdoing, if you're marginalizing people, your motive will be seen by God. You will be paid back for the wrong that you've done. There's no partiality. He's saying what we do in this life matters, whether it's at work, whether it's at home. And what we don't do matters as well. We give an account for it. God is literally watching. There's a reward in heaven for what kingdom are we building? There's judgment in heaven. There's judgment in life. Are we building our kingdom? Are we building God's kingdom? Are we building our business? Are we building, doing God's work? The Lord knows the heart. James 1:22 says, be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. We can't just say one thing and hear this. This is how we're, if we're a follower of Jesus, we need to be a doer of Jesus. There's a connection there between knowing and then the action of doing. We're deceiving ourselves if we're like, hey, I'm a Christian because I'm a Christian. Salvation is found in Jesus Christ alone, and it's the receiving of this gift of salvation from his perfection, our imperfection, confessing sin to the only one righteous, the only one that conquered sin and death, the grave, through his resurrection. That's salvation. And if we have that, then we should do what he did, which was serve others. There's an action to it. How can we claim one thing, that we follow Jesus, but our work ethic doesn't reflect that, our honoring of a boss, our servanthood in a home, the way that we love and serve his church? There has to be a connection if we're in him. I don't know how many of you guys remember this band. Some of you are younger, and it's probably for the good, but back in the late 80s, there was a band called Milli Vanilli. And not everybody has their cassette tape. Not everybody either got it at a White Elephant gift exchange, and they're waiting to like drop this on someone else with a bidet. I don't know. As part of their gift, or it's my wife's, and it's like been living in our garage. But for this moment right now, Sermon Illustration is paid for its like storage fee. Because here's why. This was an amazing group. I mean, they were just singing. They were tearing it up. They went from nobodies to somebodies. They had 19 months of just like thriving. I mean, they were like number ones. Girl, You Know It's True, Blame It on the Rain. Like it was, I mean, look at their hair. Who, like what eighth grade girl at my junior high didn't want to like, hey, bro, like I love your music. And you can honestly buy that hair like at one of those kiosks in the mall. But anyways, that's just a bald guy being jealous. But everybody loved them. And then all of a sudden, on July 21st, 1989, as they were singing, something happened. There was a power surge. And all of a sudden, the girl, you know it, girl, you know it, girl, you know it, They were lip syncing. And the track skipped. And everyone found out that these guys were a fraud. It wasn't before. I mean, they were like making millions. And then all of a sudden, they're exposed. And some of you are like, that is the saddest story I've ever heard. And others are like, Keith, you're weird. Like, why are you telling me that? Why do you have that cassette tape? And why are you admitting that you do? How many of you have this? Exactly. I'm a one of a kind. I'm created in the image of Christ. I just got amazing things. But the reason I'm telling you that and I got you laughing is because I'm going to stab you in the heart, because here's the truth. Here's the truth. There are a lot of people proclaiming the name of Jesus Christ that are lip syncing. They are saying, I'm a Christian. They're professing Christians, professing followers of Jesus. But when you look at their life and you look at their schedule, it doesn't reflect someone that's going, man, not everybody has a relationship with Jesus Christ, but it's evident by the way that I live my life that I want everyone to know. If you start looking at how time is allotted, and you look where money goes, and you look where attention is given, and you talk to the employees that work underneath them, or you gather around and you talk with their friends, you'd be like, where's Jesus in any of this? It's lip syncing. When will it be exposed? Maybe never. But God knows and God sees. Maybe the children that you're raising are all of a sudden, Dad. Maybe your roommate all of a sudden is like, you know, this isn't matching up. Because there's not just like this character flaw. It's more like, is Christ even in you? And I know that's heavy and it's hard to hear, but James, who is the half-brother of Jesus, he says it this way. He says, faith by itself does, if it does not have works, it is dead. If it's just faith, like, oh, I believe in Jesus, it's lip syncing. Is it coming from a heart? Is it coming from a true surrender to Jesus Christ? Or is it coming because this is what looks good? Maybe I'll do this and God will bless. But really, like, God, I'm not looking for any glorification that's all for yours. I'm surrendered. All of my finances, all of my resources, all the influence, my business, this family that you've given me, Lord, it's yours. And not just saying it, but doing something and having a reflective, grateful heart to be a doer of the word, not just a hearer only. It's like faith isn't meant for just the head. It has to move to the heart. And then from the heart, it moves to the hands. It's a head, heart, hands. And you know what the hinge is? The heart's the hinge. It's all about the heart. Because you can have people that, hey, look, I'm serving. Social justice stuff, good person stuff, cleaning up trails, whatever it is, you name it. But is it like, is that head, is there a belief and a surrender and a heart that's going, man, my actions are different because of Christ? The heart's really the hinge. That's why in Colossians 3:23, as I read earlier, it says, whatever you do, everything you do, work heartily for the Lord and not for men. That heartily is psuche, which is breath, the soul. It's the vital breath, the breath of life, the human soul, the seat of our affections and will. What the soul is, it's our distinct personality and the personhood and who God breathed his life into. Tying and corresponding with the Old Testament Hebrew word, nephesh, the soul, as God breathed into the very soul of man for us to become a ensouled being, the aftermath of God breathing life, a soul into us. So you better believe, like, he's gifted you, he's given you purpose, he's given you an ability to serve. He wants you to not just be a hearer, but yet a doer. He does not stand for lip syncing. I won't go strong into the lukewarm that he spits out of his mouth. But we've got to stop and go, Lord, I want to serve. I want to build your kingdom. I want to build it now. I want to invest in it now. for forever, to work heartily as to the Lord, not for men. You've heard that term, to go the extra mile, right? You know that comes from the Bible. You know that's from Jesus. That's not from like Dr. Seuss. That's not from like Tom Sawyer. That's not in Abraham Lincoln, although he might get credit for it. But here's what you need to know. It's from Jesus. In Matthew 5, 41, Jesus said, if anyone forces you to go a mile, go two with them. Why? Well, because in that day and time, a Roman soldier could ask anyone to carry their bag for a mile, which is 1,000 steps. That's a Roman mile. So what that meant is, say you're a young Jewish man and or you're hanging out, and then all of a sudden Roman soldiers came and they said, hey, carry my bag a mile. You had to carry it a mile. So they would begin counting steps. Can you imagine 998, 999, and you would just take that half step at the end to just like, they are not worthy of honor, they're not worthy of service, but I did it. So Jesus is saying, go another mile. What's expected of you and actually required of you, even if you were a Roman, you had to do this as well, to honor those that were protecting and standing for your nation. And there was all this corruptness that was going on. But just imagine that person you cannot stand. They have the right to ask you, and you have the obligation to do. And it may cost your life if you don't submit to it. So when Jesus said, go the extra mile, he says, confuse them with grace. Confuse them. You have a boss, you have somebody in your life, when you go to serve them, you're literally like, oh, 997, 98, 999, 1,000. And you clock out. 1,000. And you get off the phone. You get off the phone with them and you're just cussing them. That person in your family, like, we're supposed to go the extra mile for people that are so difficult to deal with. Christ said that. And he just didn't throw stuff out there like, oh, and do these things. He did these things. And some of you, you do this type of service. You're not looking out what's best for you. You're like, man, how can I be the gospel to other people? How can I serve where it will confuse a lost and watching world? Proverbs 6 through 11. The ant, O sluggard, consider her ways and be wise without having any chief officer or ruler. She prepares her bread in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? For you parents of teenagers, this is a great verse to memorize and put it in the wall of your children's house, of their room, and you just put it up there and you can read it and you can get animated. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? And when will you rise from your sleep? For a little sleep and a little slumber, a little folding of hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you and your children's children like a robber and want like an armed man. Now get up and be in the car in 8 minutes, right? But think about it. It's talking about the ant and it's talking about the sluggard and this sluggard that's impoverished, doing their own will and taking from other people. What does the ant do? The ant shows diligence. The ant shows planning. The ant makes provision when the harvest comes and stores up for another time. The ant has work ethic. You don't have to wonder what an ant. You ever seen a lazy ant? The only ant that you've seen going slow is the one that you sprayed with something. It's because you poured gas on them. When you were mowing, you're like, hey, what will gas do? Light it up. That's what you do. The only one that's dragging its leg is the one that you stepped on. Other than that, they're moving. They're always going places. They can lift 100 times more than their weight. They're storing up. You don't have to ask what an ant is doing. You don't have to tell an ant to clock in. They do what ants do. They are workers. You know, that's the ant. The ant isn't like, is anybody else working? You know what I'm saying here. I'm talking about your employment. I'm talking about those things like no one else does this and everybody else clocks out and everybody else has someone clock in for them. Everybody else does this. Everybody else does this. Everybody. No, this is the ant going, I've been created for this. You know, you and I, we've been created for this as well. We were created in the image of God. God set an example. He worked 6 days, rested a seventh. In the image of God is creation. In the image of God is sacrifice, as he sent his only son, sacrificial to do work, earthly work as a heavenly God, but yet man. To do work. And then when he created his first man, you have Jesus. Adam created. He gave him a job before he ever gave him a wife, he gave him a job to care for the garden and to care for the animals. And he didn't have to go around and mow and trim the hedges and prune the trees. No, it was perfect because sin hadn't entered into the world, but he had a job. And that's why every single time I do premarital counseling, I look at that young man and I say, do you have a job? I read this passage, we talk about it. It's really, really important because you've been created to work. And some work harder at not working than actually just doing the job. They work harder blaming it on someone else. They work harder saying, no, you do this, you do that. I'm the older, I'm younger. You know, you're this, you're that. I already did this. It all happens. And sometimes just do the work. You've been created for it. And do it with joy and do it with gladness. And I know I was kind of, you know, talking about premarital for a second. So since we are, and I do paid advertisements here and I get paid for each service, that's why we're adding a fifth, that we do have merge. We do have merge coming up in like 3 weeks. So if you're seriously dating someone or you're engaged, I encourage you to do it. Here's why. We want to either break you up or we want you to live happily ever after. And here's what you're going to do. You're going to put 300 hours into a wedding talking about flowers and bootin' ears and cummerbunds, if they even do that anymore. Those were the days. And you'll put 10 minutes into preparing for an actual marriage. We work on the wedding, we don't work on the marriage. So anyways, if you want to get yelled at for 8 weeks, we have that. But for real, it's a great equipping. It's a great equipping to go, how has God designed me? Where are my flaws? What can I grow in? Our goal is not to break you up. I'm sorry, I am not going to get paid for this sponsorship, okay? But it is something that to see someone submitted to God first and a young marriage that has the rest of their life ahead of them and people that have been either A, married before, bringing kids in, we have mentoring that goes on to set you up for that. Bottom line, we've been created to work. Marriage is work. Families work, communities work. It's work. We're supposed to not be a sluggard. What is a sluggard? Well, thank you for asking. A sluggard, it says, is impoverished. They're going to have poverty, and it's not talking about just financially. It's saying you'll be relationally impoverished. If you don't learn to work and you're looking to avoid things, I mean, you're putting undue weight on everybody else around you. Maybe you have a know-it-all attitude and you're unteachable because it's always the boss's fault and all these other people and all of it. You ever listen to yourself? A sluggard sleeps too much, makes too many excuses, and ultimately they're unfulfilled. You know why? Because you were made to work. You're made to work. So wisdom. Wisdom. Proverbs. Lots of wisdom in it. Are you the ant? Are you the sluggard? Are you being wise? Are you taking initiative? Because wisdom says, follow the steps of Christ. And he came to be a servant of all. So before it said work heartily, Colossians 3:17, we read this a few weeks ago. It says once again, and whatever you do, in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God through him. Jesus served all. Mark 10:45. He didn't come to be served, he came to be a servant. He didn't come to consume of this earth, he came to contribute to our sin problem. Huh. Do you simply attend the house of the Lord, or do you invest in the work of Christ? Are you an attender or an investor? Are you a consumer or a contributor? Can it be said of you that you're truly a servant? Are you serving in his local church? Are you serving in your family? Are you serving in your workplace? I want to show you a chart that kind of encompasses some of the different relationships that we have. And this is an opportunity for you to rate yourself. It's a serving study. So could you guys bring that up, the chart? This is a serving study. You got spouse, child, parent, work, community, church. And it's 1 to 10. 10 is as for the Lord, and it's very possible that you could test out like, hey, man, at work, I'm a 10, but as a spouse, I'm a 4. Like, I'm serving in this area, but not in this, but it's important to know the why. So I'm going to read some verses that we've been in over the last 6 weeks that apply to this. And we have to look at each of these categories because this passage talks about each of these categories that we've been studying, but I want to bring it to a point. What are we actually doing? Not like, oh, that is so good. When I heard about parenting and you talked about serving, or when I heard you talk to husbands, whoa, finally. Thank you for sharing that about my kids. But we have to look and go, okay, where am I? It really comes down to what are we doing? Are we hearers or are we doers? Wives, submit to your husbands as fitting to the Lord. That is hard work. Husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. That's hard work. Children, obey your parents in everything, for it pleases the Lord. That's hard work. Fathers, do not provoke your children lest they become discouraged. That is hard work. Bondservants, obey in everything those who are your earthly masters, not by way of eye service as people pleasers, but do so with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. That's hard work. See, Jesus emptied himself, taking on the form of a servant, was born in the likeness of men, and came to serve. That word servant, or doulos, it means to permanently devote yourself to the will of another. If you're a servant of Christ, a follower of Christ, have you permanently devoted yourself to do his will? And if so, how is it carrying out in these relationships? Is it as for the Lord, or is it as for yourself? Is it as for the Lord, or is it as for what's convenient? To truly be devoted, to love and lead one another, to be devoted followers of Jesus. That's what we are called to do as disciples who make disciples, who make disciples that make disciples. See, another thing that you'll find at the harbor is crazy stories. That's another thing you'll find at the harbor. It's always crazy stories. Can you imagine when the Deadliest Catch crew comes in? They're like, oh my goodness, you're never going to believe what went on. You know, and then it's like crazy. Like all the stories, and we were here, and then when the storm came in, and then this happened, and oh my goodness, like we almost stunk because we caught some, like all the stories. And we're a harbor. There's so many crazy stories of this church body. See, we used to be portable. I mean, we were like the Beverly Hillbillies. I say that, and people are like, no, you weren't. Yeah, we were. Like, do you understand? Like, look at this. Do you realize that became a church? You know, those are toys I stole from my kids. That's the blessing of being a pastor kid. Your parents sit you down, they go, hey, you know what? We're starting a church, and the church doesn't have any toys. And there's little boys and girls that are going to come in, they're going to cry. And then your dad's going to talk really long, and you're going to need something to do. And those little kids, so we stole their toys, and then we guilt them into giving more, and then when they weren't looking, we took even more. And then we created nursery space. In here, I mean, carpet squares. We made our own carpet before we could afford the square. The circle, you know, that's like sewed together. No, we had to give our carpet a haircut every week. That's what it looked like. And this dude right here, I don't know if he's like, I'm going to hide because I don't want to help anymore. He's doing setup. The dude in the Boise State sweatshirt, yeah, I'm calling you out. And we'd set the whole stage up. And the day we got the pod that sat outside the back end of Rocky was like the greatest day ever. Because we were using the back of the pickup and a trailer that we borrowed. And it was like, dude, we can keep stuff here. So all we had to do was shovel ice in front of it to get everything into the church at 5 a.m. And the flags that were out front and everything getting set up. Look at these other pictures on the next slide. We got people all over. Do you realize we did a pop-up tent? We called, hey, go to the tent. Now we have an info center. We have tables. And there we had like, you know, tablecloths are your best friend when you're a church planner. You put them on everything, the lost and found from the high school. You put it over some of the pastor's kids. You know, like, hey, just stand with the tablecloth, you know, during your fourth service of being here. You've got like this thing right there. We'd set it up and that's where all the guests go. You know how many people connected and served there? And it was literally some janky tent we had our name printed on, and it pinched your fingers every time you set it up. This dude, I don't know exactly what he's doing. He's supposed to be setting up, but obviously he's probably a Seahawks fan. Let's be honest. He's probably calling a pass play when he should just run it in for the touchdown. Just saying. These are our signs. Like you can't even see. Like where is the auditorium or children? I don't know. Just follow it. Some of you are like, what is that logo? That's our old logo. There were days that that was the logo. It was just an R. Now it's RH. Everybody thinks it's two words. It's one word. It's not capitalized in the middle. And it's not two words. Anyways, I'm just telling those of you who tag the church. It's just one word. Look here, kids, with all these lockers. Those are not cages for babies. That's the band room. This is our space that we had. Curtains are our best friends. I mean, look at those. Our kids used to play Legos on that. I stole those too, took them to the church. These beginnings, like amazing stories about, you know, one time the power went out on a Sunday morning. We only had one service. The power went out 20 minutes before. Moved the kids' ministry out to the grass and we went to the football field. I preached in a megaphone. It was great. It was so hot. You know, this day was the day we figured out if you sit on the home side, the sun burns through your first two layers of skin. It was the shortest message I ever preached. You know, when we couldn't meet because the school wouldn't allow us back when this, I don't know if you guys have heard of COVID. Most of you in Idaho didn't. But anyways, we had a meet outside and we were at the football stadium. You know what we learned many years earlier? The visitor side is the side you want to sit on. So we had church out there. It was that day. This dude right here that's sitting on these football pads that got let out that probably got somebody fired. But anyways, he's sitting there. He had those biker shorts, you know, that your coaches used to wear that were super weird. But now we're back in style for swim trunks for men. But anyways, that dude was there. Earlier, he was kicking goals. He was setting it up and kicking. He made 1 out of 11. Someone in church wasn't listening to me, and that's what they counted. I know why he's playing by himself, because no one wanted him on the team. But he decided, I'm just going to sit here and just, you know, engage. And you're probably here, and hopefully you're getting baptized today, if that's you. But what a day. Playing music. These are the crazy stories of the harbor. You know, there was a time at Rocky Mountain High School when we first started, because 89% of our church served. And it was easier to park in the back of the high school because that was easier to get to your class. You came earlier. The front doors weren't locked until a certain time. And so it was easier. And our ask back then was, will you please, 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 please park in the front? Because when people drive by and they see our signs, they'll think someone goes to this church. And they won't be like, well, I think I saw one car. It was a driver's ed car. I think they left it over the weekend. No, we wanted people to be like, there's people inside, and those things haven't stopped because now we're begging people to, hey, would you just simply park like south of Chinden at an elementary school? See, it's all about like availability and flexibility and God, what are you doing? And God, we're here for you. Like, we want to serve. We want to build your kingdom. We want to reach people. Like, not everybody knows. Like hell is actually real and not everybody knows yet. So when we serve in Christ, it really does matter. And I look at it now and I'm like, we're in a season of scooting. Like, we're literally saying, hey, would you scoot to the middle so people can sit in the aisles? Hey, would you scoot to another service? Our 8:15 service has tripled in size since we started it, as has our 1 o'clock service, because so many people have made an adjustment in their family schedule to say, you know what, I've been found. I want to make room for other people that have yet to be found. There are people that are already talking about the 5 p.m. to serve there. We're asking 1,000 people. I had a friend that's like, dude, you're never going to get 1,000. I'm like, you don't know our church. You don't know our church. You don't know what they've done before. You don't know how much they care about other people. I'm just going to trust God on this one. I'm going to watch him do something that I've never seen maybe done before. Because we don't want to touch his glory. We don't want to get in the way, but you better believe we want to be involved. We want to be invested because nothing is greater. And there's going to be 343 stories told today in baptisms, whether that's outside or inside, whether we pick them up in Nampa or we drop them off at Ann Morrison, I don't know. It's happening. There has been 2,824 prior today baptisms. So if it means we have to scoot to another service, if it means we have to scoot our serving time. And when I looked back and I read what I shared with our church on our like 3-month anniversary, we celebrated everything. We were always looking for a reason to have cotton candy. 89% of our church served. And that's just like And I know those are good old days. But I believe his kingdom is worth building. So I say, if we've got to scoot, if we've got to serve, if we've got to make room, how can we invest? Because my family, 45 years ago, was reached because people served them. And I just look back and I just thank God for those people in Garden City, Kansas, that they cared more about the people who didn't know than the fact that they were found. They were looking, they were seeking, and whatever you do, do it as to the Lord. So what is your next step? What's your next step? For some of you, it's to be baptized today, and we're going to have people down front that if you'd like to pray with them, or you'd like to talk to them about being baptized. Maybe for some of you, it's to say, I'm going to serve, period. I'm just going to serve. That's why we put that insert on the seat. We thought about putting a pen underneath it and then just jabbing people a little bit to wake them up and, you know, make them feel like, whoa, I felt the Spirit, and then they'd sign up. But to say, you know what, there are 41 people needed at the 5 p.m. There's 60 people needed. There's 12 needed. We're praying that 1,000 attend or invest their life. So today on the Next Step card, if you're in person, online, on the app, have the paper resource in front of you, I'm committing to help launch or attend the 5 p.m. service, to take a bold step to do it. Why? Because not everybody knows. Not everybody knows. But that next life, that ensouled being, is worthy of hearing. Would you pray with me? Lord, I just want to praise you. You're faithful, you're good. We just want to not just be hearers, but to be doers. We want to serve you. God, let your kingdom be built. And God, would you please let us keep being part of it? We don't want to touch your glory and we do not want to get in the way, but man, we want to be part of it. I pray your Spirit over us. Thank you for the lives that are going to celebrate today that they have been made new in you. And that person that parked someone and served in a kid's ministry and volunteered in this capacity made a way for that next person to hear. So it really isn't just a celebration of one, it's a celebration for all. And we want to see heaven populated. We love this city and you love it more. We ask this in your name. Amen.
Well, hey, we believe in next steps and we'd love to help you take yours. So over the last few minutes, maybe you felt the Lord has called you to something new, whether that's prayer, a conversation, or meeting a need specifically. We'd encourage you to DM us on a social media channel or email us at info@rockharbor.tv. Thanks for being here.